car culture swept across the United States a century or so ago, led by Henry Ford's famous Model T.
There's one car that takes you anywhere you want to go, the Model T. Strong, sturdy, with a will of its own.
Now the Model T's descendants and the transportation system built around them are part of the landscape, and our next guest says we take it for granted and overlook the costs.
In his new book, he examines the transportation world that shapes our lives often without us noticing it, and the way we move humans around and the way we move the stuff humans consume around the nation. Edward Humes is an author and journalist. His newest book is Door to Door, the Magnificent, Maddening, Mysterious World of Transportation. Edward, thanks a lot for joining us.
Great to be here.
Well, Edward, you cover a lot of ground in this book. I want to start with cars. Do we take the current state of affairs, our really car-focused culture, for granted in the United States?
Oh, I think so. And we don't have much perspective on it. One of the things I looked at is just what the toll on us is of our driving. And we drive about, 340 million miles an hour here. 340 million miles covered in an hour of American driving, and during that process, people are being injured serious enough to go to the emergency room every 12 seconds. And that huge toll, we're rather blasé about it. If you look at the deaths in a year on the road, it's like having four full airliners crash every week. But we seem to think it's just a matter of how it's done, that's the price to pay for getting around. And what I found out is it's not. They're almost all preventable.
Yeah, you write that if there's a car defect that causes deaths, even a relatively small number of deaths, this is a big deal, major lawsuits, major recalls. But this daily attrition that dwarfs the amount of that kind of an injury or death is just part of our background noise for people, you write, except unless you're involved in an accident or you're involved, if you're in the police or the ambulance that deals with that accident.
Well, part of the psychology of driving, and I guess I'm as guilty of this as anyone, is that it's everybody else's the problem, never the person who's doing the driving. It's like the old George Carlin joke, everyone who's going slower than me is an idiot, and everyone who's going faster than me is a maniac. But I'm doing it right. But that's deceptive. And a lot of the things that we do behind the wheel routinely are exactly the things that get us killed.
And you said to use the word preventable. Almost all of these would be preventable. If that's true, and if we know how to do it, why aren't we preventing this?
Well, you used the term car culture in the intro, and we have literally evolved a culture around our transportation that, by design, kills 38,000 people a year. We've designed it to do that. It's the expected result, and of course it's all preventable. A third of them are from drunken driving. We have in hand very simple technology now that can prevent drunk drivers from starting a car. We don't deploy it except in very small numbers. We have technology that, like cruise control, could limit people from exceeding the speed limit. We already have smartphones that give us all the information we need to accomplish that, but we seem to think we have an inalienable right to drive at speeds that are unsafe. That's another third of deaths on the highway, speeding. And the last part is distraction. We all think we can do about five things at once while we're driving, eating, texting, whatever. But our brains really aren't good at that. We can do one thing well at a time. And distraction is the other big piece of the puzzle. And there's plenty of technology that could prevent us from manipulating our cell phones except by voice command while in a moving car. But we don't deploy that either. We could prevent all these accidents.
Talking to Edward Humes, his new book is Door to Door, The Magnificent, Maddening, Mysterious World of Transportation. Edward, we'll get back in the car in a little bit, but your book isn't just about cars. You spend a lot of time looking at what you say is, in a lot of ways, almost a completely invisible part of our transportation system, the ways we get our stuff from ports to our local store and into our houses. Why do we not see all this happening?
Well, it's all the stuff, we obsess on our commutes, but that's really, in some ways, the smallest part of our transportation footprint in terms of the actual miles. There's millions of miles of transport embedded in our daily lives. With the cup of coffee I drank this morning, it took 30,000 miles to get those beans, that blend of beans, to my home. My smartphone's got a trip to the moon in miles. My car 30,000 globally sourced parts moving in this vast choreography between countries back and forth, turning into assemblies, turning into larger components, and finally turning into a car that's made 12,000 miles away. Now we're talking 500,000 miles of transportation before the odometer clicks a single mile with me driving it. So each one of our products, each of the things we take for granted in our lives has this huge infrastructure embedded in it, and that's growing all the time. E-commerce is making it grow all the time.
You have a quote that I love in the book about kind of the invisibility of that that transportation that gets us the stuff we use. A hearing about whether or not to build a port in a community to bring stuff into the country, and one person attending said, "Why do I need a port? I have Walmart."
Exactly.
Talk about that sense of well, stuff's just at Walmart. Where did it come from?
Well, and that's the perception that it somehow magically appears inside a store for us to go buy it. But, of course, that's not the case. Almost all the goods that Walmart sells to us came in to the country on a giant container ship through a port. From the port, it gets on a train. From the train, it gets on a truck. Every product that you touch in your home has been on a truck at one or more points along the line. And all of that and more is required to bring a pair of socks or a smartphone or anything else you can think of to us. And that's great. I mean, we've built this. It is magnificent. It's a huge achievement to be able to do what we do, this art of logistics. It may be humanity's most enormous achievement, but at the same time, we don't want to really pay the true cost of it. We want to click on that buy it now and have our product magically appear, but we also can't stand to have trucks on the road. We can't stand to pay taxes in order to keep that transportation system intact, and we have a huge backlog on that score. So we want it both ways, but since we're not actually picking up the tab, we're headed towards a somewhat dire fork in the road.
Well, getting back to cars, you write that, you know, in 100 years or so, we've gone from Zeppelins to a high-tech aircraft managed with incredible air traffic control systems. Computers have revolutionized, management of the ports, Amazon's logistics, things like that. And yet, when we get behind the wheel of a car, we're in something that's not much more than a glorified Model T. Why so little progress in cars compared to everything else?
It's the only thing we still measure in horsepower. You know, even the dimensions of a car, as they conventionally exist now, are based on the width of a two horse drawn cart.
Right. Our cars are about 6 feet wide. You're right, and that came from the width of a horse car.
Exactly, and in so many ways, it's still an industrial age, 19th century technology with a lot of fancy computer chips and safety features bolted on top of it. But it's still that Model T model is still what we're driving around. Even the efficiency of it hasn't changed much in terms of the ratio of fuel that moves the car versus energy that's wasted. It's barely moved the needle. And that 80 cents out of the dollar you spend on gasoline is literally wasted. Doesn't move the car. It's inefficiency incarnate.
So why? We're advancing all these other things, but in many ways our cars are stuck in neutral, historically speaking. What is it about the cars that have made us, I mean, they've obviously changed a lot, safety features, radios to things like that, but why have they moved so slowly compared to everything else in our technology?
We love them. I mean, they are such a huge part of our lives, everything from rite of passage in our youth, getting that driver's license, to being hauled away in a very shiny black hearse. At the end of it, cars are integrated into our lives in ways that are beyond the rational and are really part of our way of life. And like a lot of things that are so a part of our daily existence, we don't question them anymore. We don't ask, why does it have to be this? Why do we champion this, what Morgan Stanley calls the most underutilized asset in our daily lives, the car, because it sits by the curb 22 or more hours out of a day. It's like having a worker who puts in a 14-hour work week but gets full pay. Our cars are just, in so many ways, really insane in terms of their lack of safety, in terms of their impact on the environment, and in terms of their cost versus the return on investment. And yet, they're convenient, they're at our beck and call, And it's just the way it's been now for 100 years. So we are clinging to a very old model when almost everything else in our lives has been revolutionized.
We're talking to Edward Humes. His new book is Door to Door, The Magnificent, Maddening, Mysterious World of Transportation.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think we rely on cars too much in the United States? What alternatives do you think we should be pursuing? Or do you think the convenience of cars is worth the cost of the things our guest is describing? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation about car culture in America and the costs we pay for it. Edward Humes is our guest. He's the author of the book Door to Door, The Magnificent, Maddening, Mysterious World of Transportation.
Call now at 800-642-1234 to join the conversation. Do we rely too much on cars, on roads in the United States? Should we invest more in alternatives? What alternatives, if so? Or do you want all our transportation money going to cars? That's the convenient way. That's the thing we use. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We have an excerpt from the book, by the way, linked there. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Mike on the line in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
I agree with the statement completely. We agree or rely on cars too much. We get all of our food from cross country, whether it be using semi trucks or trains. People live out of town to drive, and they drive into work. So it's like if one of the legs goes away, we're kind of out of luck. You're not going to be able to get to work if your car is broken. If the cost of fuel rises too much, people might not ship the products, and then shelves are going out empty. We don't like rely on local food sources, and people don't live really close to their jobs anymore. They rely on their cars.
Mike, thanks a lot for that call. Edward, he brings up a lot there. Maybe the core point that we've really designed our lives, our whole society around cars, given how we've built things, isn't it going to be kind of hard to wean ourselves away from what we've got now?
It is. And the answer really isn't to condemn cars and to do away with them. That's not going to work because, as you say, we built a world that we live in that makes them extremely valuable. So maybe it's the way that we use and deploy cars, not the cars themselves, that are a big part of the problem. Look at the lessons of ride sharing, of Lyft and Uber and those companies in that space. Now they've changed the dynamic for cars. Instead of owning your car, you buy time in it, and then it goes off and takes somebody somewhere else. You can do much more with a single vehicle when you have a share service. Now if you add the up-and-coming technology of driverless cars to that, now suddenly you have a really interesting scenario where car ownership might fade, and you could sort of buy travel time like you buy minutes on your smartphone. And it doesn't have to be the jack-of-all-trades cars that we drive now. You could have purpose-built cars that are part of a shared fleet, maybe one- and two-passenger vehicles, larger ones for larger loads. And you have the added safety of a robot driving your car that never drinks, gets distracted, or speeds. That would revolutionize personal transport and solve what we call the last mile, first mile problem. People don't take transit, mass transit, or trains much because it's so inconvenient to get to the station. A fleet of shared driverless cars solves that problem. Picks you up to the door, takes you to the station.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Getting back to that, the basic layout of our lives, there's almost a culture war element in it. It seems like sometimes when you start going for more, bike-friendly or pedestrian-friendly roads or streets or mass transit. And when you look at the late Rob Ford's election as mayor of Toronto, a lot of his campaign was on saving the car in some ways. High-speed rail was an issue in elections here in Wisconsin. This is a touchy subject when you start trying to change things.
It is. It always is. And that's why it's necessary to compromise. Why, we've invested a lot in transit plans, mass transit, trains, light rail, and so forth around the country, different communities, and it oftentimes has failed to reduce traffic, and it's an important lesson. There's a lot of good reasons to have public transit available, but if we expect it to solve our traffic problems, we're going to be continually disappointed. I think the real solution is to make the various forms of transportation mesh together and give people more choices for how they get around. So you don't have to be utterly dependent on a car or utterly dependent on some other form of transportation. And frankly, the other thing Americans need to start thinking about is we walk less than any other developed nation in the world. We seem to hate walking more than any other country, and it's almost weird, and it's a new development. Kids don't walk to school anymore. Most of the trips we take during the day, half of them are 3 miles or less, and yet we get in our car and drive for almost all of them. So there's something about our culture, and maybe it's no coincidence that we're also one of the more obese nations around, that we just have stopped walking. And that's something that is going to take some effort to look at and change, but perhaps it's something we need to pay more attention to.
Talking to Edward Humes about his new book, Door to Door, The Magnificent, Maddening, Mysterious World of Transportation. Back to our callers now. We've got John on the line in Fall River. John, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, is it worth all the extra money that we have to shell out with these new cars? You know, like, for instance, if your oil pan rusted out on these new cars, it can be $800 to $1,000. You got to pull the engine. That was never the case years ago. Mechanical fuel pump was bolted right on the engine block, and that was like $25. You could change that out in 10 minutes versus this electric fuel pump, $400 to $600. Shock absorbers versus struts, it just goes on and on. You know, where's our electric car that they've been talking about for 50, 60 years?
John, thanks a lot for the call. So talk about hidden costs, hidden personal costs in a way when we think, oh, the cost of buying the car, the cost of fuel, repair costs can sneak up on us. It may be making less sense, I guess he's saying, Edward, for our personal economies to be a car owner.
Yeah, no, a car is the second most expensive family cost next to your housing. It's huge. I put together some figures that if you account for all costs, including repair, insurance, and depreciation, we pay about $12,500 a year for a car. Again, a car that sits by the curb 22, 23 hours out of the day. If you have an SUV, you can tack another $2,000 on top of that $12,500. So it's a really expensive investment, and I agree they've become more complex, and the age of the backyard weekend mechanic that I grew up with is kind of passé for modern vehicles. And the solution there again maybe is the mechanical simplicity of an electric car. They have far less parts, they're far more efficient, and we seem to be solving the problem of range. Every year they are more effective, and if we share them in the sort of driverless car future that a lot of people are envisioning, EVs make even more sense, because most trips we take are short trips, and you don't need a long-range vehicle for most of them.
Thanks a lot for that call. Edward, I don't want to get away from this without getting to the local street. You write about how anything that's a road or a street is really car-focused. You say to allow more modes of transportation, get us out walking more, we need to rethink that local street as more than just an avenue for cars. How do we do that?
Well, you know, not all traffic is bad. When in the sort of main street area where you have a mix of shoppers and walkers and bicyclists and cars, traffic congestion is a good thing. It's a sign of economic activity, because those streets are primarily not to get from point A to B, but they are builders of wealth. That's what local streets are supposed to be for. Everything else, the roads and highways, those are about getting from point A to point B as fast as we can, and that's where we want traffic to flow smoothly. What we don't want to do is try and make hybrids out of it and have them be the best of both worlds, because invariably they'll be the worst of both worlds. And we, the name I've heard of that from an organization called Strong Towns is STRODES, you know, a combination of street and road, and they just don't work well. That's where most of the accidents happen. And we have gotten into sort of developing that way. That also requires some rethinking, you know, either a road or a street, but don't try to be both.
Edward, briefly as we wrap up, do you see an appetite in our culture to rethink the way we use our cars, the way we invest in infrastructure?
Oh, absolutely. And we see the trends. There's in poll after poll of the millennial generation and younger who are less entranced with having their own cars as generations passed, and more interested in mobility by any means. You know, what They are big users of apps that put together travel itineraries for them that get them where they want to go, whether it's on the bus or the train or in a ride share or in their own car. They just want to get there, and they don't care how. And that's very promising for the future.
We'll leave it there. Edward, thank you so much for joining us today.
Been a pleasure.
We've been talking to Edward Humes. His newest book is called Door to Door, The Magnificent, Maddening, Mysterious World of Transportation. Still time to share your thoughts on what he has to say on the role of the car in American culture, for good or for bad. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page and let us know what you think over there. And by the way, we've got a link to an excerpt from his book focused on cars in particular that is linked at the Central Time Facebook page. And remember, if you want to share your thoughts in 140 characters or less, you can always tweet us at Central Time WPR. Love to hear what's on your mind.